Yeah.
We represent the greater community of Lafayette, but voting and stuff, all these people, they all live in Central City.
Well, John, why is Gay or more senior?
Okay, I'll call to order the Lafayette City Council, Wednesday, July 11th, 2018, at exactly 6 p.m. for a regular session. Establish a quorum.
Connie Grease, present.
Stu Barger, present.
Don Greider, present.
Craig Heaton, present.
Trent Tenen, present.
Okay, we have a quorum. Pledge of Allegiance and Holly, since you may not be around for it.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, added agenda items. Corey, do you have any?
Staff doesn't have any.
I'd like to add one and just discuss a little bit on fireworks. Any objections, fireworks? Any objections from anybody on that one? Okay. Public comments. Any public comments out there? Anybody want to say anything before we get started? Nobody? Okay, that's good, I guess. Consent agenda. Approval minutes for June 13th, June 27th, reimbursements, financial reports. Has everybody looked at them? Does anybody have a motion or objection or anything?
I move we adopt the consent agenda.
I second it.
Okay, first and second, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Consent agenda passed. Okay, well, moving right along here. Okay, ordinance 2018-04. An ordinance of the City of Lafayette amending ordinance number 2015-04, which ordinance concerns City of Lafayette's water system utility, authorizing the city to establish utility billing assistance program. And since that's an ordinance, we're going to have open a public hearing, and the public hearing is open as of right now. We need a staff report. Corey, do you want to report on that one?
I'm going to defer to either Jake or Ashley.
Okay.
I'm going to defer to Jake.
Jake, what do you got for us?
So the big words you want to take out of this ordinance is utility billing assistance programs. So we're forming programs to help out the community with billing assistance, whether it's in the form of a reduction based on their median income or delinquency accounts we can come and help out with. There's two different avenues. Basically, the first one I said, which you're either 50% of the household median income, and we're going to reduce your utility rates for the year based on application processes and meet a certain criteria. Or if you fall into a delinquent account, we're going to have vouchers available they can get from St. Vincent de Paul to help with that delinquency, to get the water back on or prevent it from being turned off. So those are the two programs we're doing. In order to get this in effect, we had to amend our ordinance to create this for the water side. And then you'll see the second one's going to be for the sewer side as well. We talked about this at the work session as well.
The only piece I would add is that this is the way it was written when you saw it at the work session, which means, as he just said, this is only amending the ordinance to allow for the creation of the program. It doesn't create the program. That's where we had the discussion about the follow-up resolution that council will formally create the program with. So there's still some more work for
you're
staff.
You're going to see all the details of how that program is going to look. It isn't going to be in effect now as soon as this passes. It just enables us to create that program.
Okay, and that'll take place in the next couple of months.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Public comments? Anybody want to talk about that, mention anything, any questions on it? On what we're doing? None? Council, start with you, Connie.
I guess the only question I had, and it will probably come out more when we discuss the program, but I thought I'd bring it up while it's on my mind, is that are we going to have a cap on how many we're reducing? I think it's great that we're reducing, but in order to meet city budget, is there going to be a, you know?
So we budgeted in a pretty conservative amount to, that we thought that we probably wouldn't even get to that, close to that amount for this year. This is kind of our pilot year. Once we get it rolled out, we'll have a better idea next year if we want to bring it down or open it to take in more people. So we'll see, to be determined.
Okay.
There is no cap currently.
Stu, anything?
Wait for the discussion at the meeting with Flushing.
Okay. Don?
The only thing I have is I was concerned about one sentence in here. It says, notwithstanding this broad authority, the city manager will act reasonably in compliance with the applicable federal, state, and local laws, regulations, and ordinances, and in a manner the city manager reasonably believes is the city's best interest. That leaves the entire discretion to the city manager. Is that not correct?
I think what that sentence is accomplishing is it's saying that the council has the authority, I'm just working my way down through the paragraph, the council has the authority by resolution to create such programs.
Right.
The city manager is authorized and to a degree obligated to administer and manage those programs, but while doing that, still must make sure that the city is acting in compliance with applicable state, federal, and local laws. So I think all it's trying to really say is that the program, council has the ability to create programs, but council doesn't have the ability to violate federal, state, and local laws. So if we passed a program that did that, I would should not administer or manage that program, if that makes sense.
Well, my point is that you are the ultimate authority. Is that not correct?
That's not correct.
Okay.
The council would be ultimate authority.
Okay. Elaborate more on that, or are you
right.
Done?
Okay, go ahead.
No comment.
Okay, and under that guidelines, you can pass that authority off to the public works manager, too. As the city grows, or as the city, you know, if it gets too busy, or whatever. Okay. Going to, should have closed the public hearing before since there were no public comments. Council deliberations. Now we need.
I make a motion we approve ordinance 2018-14, an ordinance of the city of Lapine amending ordinance number 2015-04, which ordinance concerns city of Lapine's water system utilities, authorizing the city to establish utility billing assistance programs.
Okay, and we might as well start with you for a roll call vote.
Need a second.
It needs to be seconded.
A second. Need a second?
I'll second.
Okay.
Roll call. Mike Reese, aye.
Stu Martinez, aye.
Don Greider, aye.
Craig Heaton, aye.
Okay, passed unanimously. We're moving on to the ordinance 2018-05, an ordinance of the city of Lapine amending ordinance 2015-05, which ordinance concerns the city of Lapine sewer system utility, authorizing the city to establish utility building assistant programs. Okay, this is very similar, or very much alike. Just
very similar, just seven. Two different ones, just
okay.
One different word.
Okay, sewer. We'll open a public hearing on this. And a staff report, and I assume you're going to take care of that.
Yeah, it's the same staff report. It's the same program just for the sewer utility. Yep.
Okay, any public comments on this one? None? Okay, we'll close the public hearing then. Council deliberations. Craig, you have anything, any comments on this?
No comments.
Don?
I've already made my comment. Thank you.
Okay. Sue? Connie?
No.
I need a...
I'll make a motion that we pass ordinance number 2018-05, an ordinance of the City of Lapine amending ordinance number 2015-05, which ordinance concerns City of Lapine's sewer system utility, authorizing the city to establish utility billing assistance programs.
Okay, a second?
Second.
First and second then. Start with the roll call vote.
Craig Eaton, aye.
Todd Ryder, aye.
Stu Martinez, aye.
Connie Bruce, aye.
Okay, passed unanimously. So both of those ordinances, you know, they're really just to take care of our, take care of the public, you know, that has a hard time paying their bills, especially when Cato Road gets added on and Glenwood Pines, so I think, and thanks for doing that, Jake, because it's ahead of the game, really, or Ashley. Thanks, Ash. Okay, now we're going to have a discussion about employee health insurance. As you know, at the last budget meeting, we were shocked by the amount it has increased or wanted to increase, and I believe we have Rich, is it?
It's all of them? All, just all of them.
All of them, okay.
Yep.
Okay, and he's going to explain to us, so just give your name and where you're from and all that information. Tell us who you've got.
And I don't want to provide too much history, but okay. I will just mention that we've been talking about this for a few months. It really generated from some conversation between myself and staff, and myself looking at where we were, and the last time we made a change in regards to health insurance coverage, health insurance premiums, the amount we provide, and I don't know if we ever have in the history of the city. So been working with Rich for at least a couple months, maybe more than that, going back and forth with some numbers. Based on our conversation at the work session last month, definitely wanted him to be here in person. This is what he does, so I'll let him speak moving forward, and appreciate you being here, Rich. Thanks.
Nope, that's my pleasure. So I'm Rich Alm with WHA Insurance. I'm actually the agent for the city, and my job is really to look at options that are available. Corey kind of tasked me with, you know, looking at some differences in contribution, just because the fact that we were looking at it, you know, it was good for basically a single employee, but for a family, it left something to be desired, so to speak, at that point in time. So I just kind of wanted to do some education, kind of where we're at, and kind of what we're looking for towards for this upcoming year, and then just give a little background on some options that we have available. So what I did is I put together a packet for you guys. Inside the packet, there's the first page in here. It'll say current plus renewal across the top of it. We do have the actual numbers for January 1 of 2019 at this point in time. Claims this year have been up kind of across the board. So city and county's insurance has actually had some higher increases than they have historically in the past. So we're seeing a little bit larger increase this year. Plan design, they're staying the same. But as we go down towards the bottom of this page under the contribution sections, it has the employee cost there as well as the employer cost. And the way the city's set up currently is they'll pay up to $1,000 per employee. When you know, when we look at just a single employee, it means that there's no cost out of their pocket, but they don't have a way of spending that additional dollar since we've allocated $1,000 to each of the employees. Where it gets a little tough is when we get down into the employee family portion. At this point, currently, for an employee, you know, family, you're looking at about $828 a month. And that amount, if you look over to the right-hand column, is going to be jumping up to $974 per month. So, you know, it's a substantial hit there for those that have families. And this was something that Corey and I kind of talked a little bit about. You know, what could we do differently? How could we maybe offset things? Because he was kind of, you know, wanting to keep things as equal as possible for all the employees, but at the same point in time, you know, kind of help those families, so to speak.
Would you like to, for us to ask questions as we go? Or
sure, ask away.
How about every category or every topic you're on, then we'll ask questions.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Good time to start?
Yep, that's a good time to start.
Okay. Connie, you have anything up to date on this?
I understand what you said so far.
Okay. Stu?
No.
Okay, Don?
No.
No questions at this point. Okay.
No questions.
Okay. Perfect. So this was just really to set the stage, kind of where we're at today, what we're looking at for January 1 of 2019. The next page in here is a cost and contribution comparison. What I did is went back to the office and took some information from the other cities and public entities that we work with to kind of get an idea of what they're paying for benefits for the employees. This is just the counts basically that I work with, that we had the access to the information on. But some of them are right here in town. So like if we look at Lapine Fire, for an example, as we go down this, you can see the rates. You'll see the employee contribution there, how much the employee pays, as well as how much the employer pays. For Lapine Fire, they basically pick up all of the insurance costs for the employee and dependents. And then below that, what we've done is put an average cost per month in here of what they spend per employee. So, you know, in their case, they're doing about $1,433 per month for each employee. Jumping down a little bit in here, I put in the City of Roseburg, City Grants Pass. Similar, they offer multiple plans in those cases, but you can see in both of those cases as well, the amount that they're paying for each employee is, you know, $1,400 or better in all of those cases as well. And then what they're really doing is, if you look at how much the employee pays with a family, you know, it's not that much on an average overall. And then of course, if we go down to the bottom, I did put one of the quotes we had in here for one of the local employers. I do not have their permission to share that, so I just left that as blank. But that wanted to give another local perspective as to what they pay at this point in time. And they're up in the $1,766 per employee range. So, you know, doing kind of a comparison apples to apples out there, you know, the $1,000 that the city's currently putting towards each employee, it's probably a little less than what the other entities are doing on the public sector at this time.
Did you have anything smaller? I mean, I'm assuming that Roseburg Grants Pass and even fire, local fire department and 50 employer with 57 employees all have way more employees than the city of Lapine.
They do have more employees than the city of Lapine. You know, when we look at some of the other smaller employers on the public entity side, most of them pay about 90% or better for the employee benefits for all employees for the most part. There are a few that pay a little less, but I could get some others. We could get some additional data for you on it.
I just don't find them extremely comparable.
No, and it's
talking about number of employees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's the contribution part, and that was kind of where, you know, Corey and I were looking for kind of a happy medium in there, but we just wanted something to compare to at this point. We can do further research on that as well.
If we had more employees, would it come down a little bit less? I mean, most of the time, a small group gets charged more than a large group.
So one of the things that with the city, they're part of City and County Insurance Association. So in actuality, the city program is a large employer program. It is actually a self-funded program that's handled by City County Insurances. So it is an actual, it's basically all of the small cities and counties across the state, or majority of them, it's not all of them, I shouldn't say all, but majority of the smaller ones. A lot of the larger ones are independently on their own. But what we're finding is the rates are, you know, very consistent. If you look down through here at the rates that we have through City of Lapine, they're very similar to those like through Grants Pass and through the other entities as well. So they are fairly similar.
Anything else? Anybody?
Questions for you guys on this portion?
Pardon?
Any questions on this portion?
Nope. I think that's it. We just need comparisons.
So perfect.
It's a shock.
It is a shock, and it's like one of those things that we haven't looked at it for quite some time, so I think it was a good time to go back and look at it. So what we did was we took kind of the data that we had and kind of looked at the big sheet that we pulled out here of different scenarios and different ways of kind of divvying up the dollars, so to speak. When Corey and I were talking, you know, when we give an employee $1,000 to spend currently, if it's an employee-only type contract, they can spend up to about $700 of that, but they don't get the remaining $300. As to where if an employee had dependents, they get the full $1,000. So we kind of had the discussion, you know, what could happen with those additional dollars? And one of the programs that we work a lot with public entities is something called an HRA VEBA. It's something that is probably, I have it with probably 90% or better of my employer groups that I work with throughout the state. What it basically is it's a trust that's set up to allow employers to put dollars under the employee's name into the trust. Once the employer submits the dollars, it's tax-free to the employee. Those employees go into a bucket with the employee's name on it, and those dollars can be used for future medical expenses and/or post-retirement premiums. And where they're becoming very, I guess, very liked at this point in time is that since they can use them for either future medical expenses or post-retirement premiums, a lot of people are actually saving them because they can invest within these programs and have growth within the programs. And the goal is really to save those dollars. So if you wanted to retire, say, prior to 65, you'd have a mechanism to cover those premiums until you're Medicare eligible. So this has been kind of a very popular program. What's kind of funny is the groups that actually have it actually have higher deductible programs than the groups that don't. Just because the fact that when they start to see the value of the extra dollars going in there, you know, and allowing it to build up, they're not scared to go to a higher deductible anymore because then they have that extra dollars in there to use for future. So it is a program that we talked about. When we kind of went through these scenarios, Corey and I kind of went through kind of the different thought processes. Starting on the left-hand side is, of course, the current program and then the renewal program that we talked about in the beginning there. But then as we noticed at the bottom, we did different variations of that. We did basically saying, you know, if we give each employee $1,000 and then we put the excess into the VIVA program, what that would look like. We moved that the contribution up to $1,200 and then did the same concept, putting 100% of whatever's left over for like an employee into the VIVA portion. I also put in here a column showing a 90% contribution where basically we'd say, you know, we pay 90% of the health insurance for the employees, then the employee will be responsible for 10% of that. Where Corey and I kind of got into the part we liked probably the most between these two programs was in the last two columns where we actually looked at moving the contribution up to $1,200 or $1,400 in these columns, but which would help the families get those costs down a little bit. But rather than putting 100% of the excess into Aviva, just putting 50% of that in there. So it would still benefit the employee that doesn't have any dependents. They'd still get something extra in their Aviva program, but it would also offset and help those that have families. And when Corey and I were talking a little bit, you know, the hardest thing is when you have an employee and you start out and they're just a single employee, and you go through the process of training them, educating them, you know, having them become a key component within the organization. And then maybe they get married, have kids, and all of a sudden, you know, at this point in time, the way it's set up, they basically take $1,000 a month pay cut. And so what it does is it kind of causes that person to maybe look elsewhere and outside of the organization. So that's something that we didn't really want to have happen. And the other thing is, if we're out recruiting employees, a lot of my employers say it's really hard to get good employees these days. And when you're out looking at, you know, how to bring a new employee on, when you have that high out of pocket on the medical side, it's hard to entice them to come over to the organization. So we kind of looked at it from multiple perspectives in here. This is just kind of an example of, you know, some of the thoughts we had. We do have some of the employers that have said, hey, let's do it to where we pay a percentage of the premium. So say we pay 90%, everybody pays 10% of the cost of the premium, but we'll give each employee $100 a month across the board into the VIVA portion of it so that everybody's building up a account for future. So you can do this kind of any way you want to, but just kind of wanted to give you some education on what's available. And I know Corey was really interested in the HRA VIVA portion of it because it does allow for those that are younger that don't have, you know, major medical expenses at this point to be able to do something different with the money rather than just give it to the insurance companies. And so this way it's something we can put away for the future.
Is that money vested?
It is. It's basically, it's held in trust and it's the employee's money. So the trust is in control of it. The one that we've used basically the most, it's probably the most recognized throughout the state of Oregon and Washington, is HRA Viva Services, also known as Gallagher. Out of Spokane, Washington, and the fees with them are fairly minimal on the accounts.
So what I mean is, if somebody has saved up, say, $1,000, and he leaves the company,
it is vested.
Still have that $1,000 go with him.
Correct, it does go with
you
them.
You would have the ability to establish the vesting schedule.
Right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, and then basically, typically, what they do is most employers just vest 100% of when the money goes in. That way, it becomes the employees. They can, if they do leave, they take it with them. But it is a great way to, you know, kind of set the stage for the future, so to speak.
The company that Rich mentioned that Gallagher, I mentioned Chase, I think it's McCarthy, I mentioned it in the staff report at the work session. So if there's interest and support for creating that, what I would likely do is reach out to Chase and have him available, such as Rich is tonight, possibly at one of the upcoming council meetings, so that any questions can be addressed on that as well.
Well, I'd like to go along with what Connie says. I'd like to see what's offered to people where they have six or seven employees, municipalities.
Yeah, and what we're, and so, I mean, I guess we could go back and gather that information. If we look at the city counties, it's a one rate for all pretty much across the board. So if we look at those other entities, the only thing we could really look at would be what their contribution is, if they're part of that cities, counties organization. On the fire side, most of those are part of Special Districts Association of Oregon as well, another large employer. So they're gonna be pretty consistent across the board as well. But really what we could look at would be the contribution portion, and I think probably if Corey and I want to do some outreach to some of the other local organizations around, we could get some more information on that portion of it.
I mean, the whole thing is we just want to be fair.
Yeah.
We don't want to short our employees at all.
No, and that's one thing Corey and I were looking at was, you know, looking at kind of the family structure and what the costs are. You know, it's one of those where we could see it could be, you know, kind of detrimental in the hiring process or getting, you know, quality employees. And so we wanted to take a look at that, especially this year when we looked at the cost going up about $200 per month for those families. We don't currently have any on the program. At this point, we have 5 employees covered and 1 employee child covered. So we don't have any families at this point in time, but, you know, that could change at any point or along the way.
And along those lines, what you'd likely see in some of the smaller jurisdictions is that they do have a cost sharing approach, you know, 95-5 or 90-10, whatever the split is. So this, it's gonna cost the city more for a family, but it's gonna cost the city less for an individual because the individual is gonna be contributing as well. And what Rich just mentioned is that we have almost all individuals on our plan. So if we switch to a 90-10 cost share, employees would actually lose benefit at the current makeup of our employees. So it's, as I mentioned, we don't have a collective bargaining unit. It's partly reflecting the current employee makeup while also trying to project, retain, hire for future needs and demands as well. The other piece I'd say is that during the budget committee meetings, the increase that we put in there, that allocates over $100,000 for the city to pay for health insurance costs. But based on the makeup of our employee situation, this last column, either the last 2 columns, what you're seeing at the very bottom are those annual employer costs, and they're, you know, $71,000 or $78,000. So significantly less than what we would budget as if we had every single employee with a family and we were contributing that max amount. But that's an unlikely scenario and not even close to the scenario now. Yeah.
And I know Corey was talking, we were talking a lot about being fair to all of the employees, you know, and that was kind of the where it started from. And then we started looking at what the other contributions were, and it kind of led into further conversation. But, you know, when we actually said, you know, hey, we're going to give $1,000 to an employee to spend, but when there's for an employee only contract, there's no way to spend that money. So basically they kind of lose the excess dollars at this point in time.
Okay, any other counsel? No questions? You're gonna go there, yeah. Family. Nope, nothing. Okay, so the next step from here is we're gonna do what?
Well, I heard at least a couple of you say that you wanted more data.
Just a little bit more data, yeah.
Okay. Do you feel like you need more information on the HRA BIBA component as well? That's pretty straightforward. Okay. And the nice thing about that is that it's it doesn't obligate the city to anything. It's a contribution, and then that's it. So
yeah,
there's no unfunded liability. Nothing's gonna, you know.
And basically, it's negotiated every year with the medical contract, so it's done on an annual basis. So once we set it, you know, that would be what would be available for that next year, which would match the medical plan. And then that next year, we could make changes to it. So if down the road, maybe the cost went up to a point where there was no dollars left, at that point, the city would just no longer contribute to that program. But the program itself would remain intact.
So on the HRA NEMA piece, what I'll do is I'll reach out to Chase and talk with him. And then there is a resolution, there's a few steps the city needs to go through to implement that. So we can have some of those documents available, I would think, at the work session in a couple of weeks, just to review those. I don't think Chase needs to come here in person. And then in regards to the insurance levels, we can get some more data. I would hope that we could then continue the conversation at that point. And in order to change the cap amount, that, to actually do it, will require an amendment to our employee handbook that's outlined in there. So it would be a, you know, it would be a process at some point in the next month.
We could do it in a couple of months.
Yeah.
Easily.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And we probably work with close to 100 agencies, or public agencies throughout the state. So is there a geographic location you would like us to focus on?
I'm ready to do something tonight, because trying to find comparables with this small of an organization, you're not going to find what you're looking for. We went through the same process at the fire district 30 years ago, because it was so small at that time, that we wound up looking at, you know, some, because you have to stay within your region because of your environment, you know, so the cost of living within that region. So at the fire district, we wound up looking at Madras, the same cities that you will probably look at for this. It's not going to make that much difference.
Okay, but we still have to pass a resolution, we got to change the handbook.
Yes.
So we could get all those things started.
If
you have any questions?
I love the idea of the $1,000 contribution.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, because it's easier if you just do a flat dollar amount, because then it makes it real simple for budgeting purposes as well. Just looking at the $1,000 at this point is probably a little bit on the low side. And so that's what we were talking a little bit about, bumping that up.
And so what we put in the budget was $1,200. That was the number we were talking about originally. That was actually before we had the rates of what are going to be effective in January. And then as I alluded to earlier, based on the fact that we don't have, you know, 7 families on our plan, we're going to be way under that budgeted amount. At the same time, if we made a change now, there's nothing that stops us from revisiting this in a year and saying, this number needs to go up or this number needs to go down. So I think I'm hearing support on the HRA NEMA component, and then I think a little direction on what you think would be appropriate for that cap level would be helpful.
Yeah, because really, I mean, the HRA NEMA portion is really simple. We just need the signed resolution basically saying we want to establish the program. And then there's a document that sets up basically how much has been to be contributed to the employee and how those dollars will be distributed on, it has to be on a non-discriminatory basis. So it has to be pretty straightforward. And that is something that could be amended then each year, that document. But really typically the main starting point of that is getting the resolution to actually set up the program. And there's no cost to do that. It's just a matter of getting the approval to do so and then building from that point forward. Then everything else would go into the budget portion.
We may have a lot of singles right now, but if we have a decent program, we may add some families added, you know, they're 3 years now.
Well, and you can adjust that.
Yeah, we got to just adjust to that, yeah.
Yeah, and that's something like Corey said, you know, if we get more families on the plan, you know, it may change the actual totals, but we're really budgeting for, at this point, for families on the plan. So just we're coming in as single and actually coming in under budget, so.
So with all due respect, I still would like numbers from smaller cities that, you know, just because Stu's ready to move forward, I think that's the information that we asked for to begin with. And I don't think that the cities that we got are really comparable to what we have.
I don't think that's unreasonable, just this side of the Cascades, probably.
Okay.
Central Oregon.
We can do that.
And then you can have that together by the next work session, I'm sure.
Yeah, we can do some outreach to them, it's all pretty much public information, so. And what we're basically going to be looking at is, since they're all pretty much with the city side of it, they're going to be with the same program, we're just basically going to ask what contribution is for them, and that'll give us an idea what they're paying towards the employee portion.
That's right.
And I think even more so, less about this is just my opinion or recommendation, is less about the size of the jurisdiction, or again, whether it's fire or a school district or a city or a county, but more so what is within a 45 minute or mile radius of where we are, because those are the jobs, those are the employees that we're competing against. In the sense that if someone could get a job with Deschutes County and it's better across the board in terms of wages, retirement, and healthcare, they're probably gonna take that. And there's some pros to, if you live in Lapine and you work in Lapine, that's understood, but I would say, and there are some small cities in Central Oregon we can pull comps for, but I think having even what Redmond or Madras or Bend or Deschutes County offers is a good perspective.
Well, it's not gonna hold up anything if you go on and make an attempt to find some smaller cities and stuff.
Yeah, no, we definitely have to get all that.
Make an attempt to do that for us. Make us happy. I don't think that's an unreasonable request at all.
No, not at all.
It's not gonna hold anything up. You know, we'll still put it on the calendar for resolution and changing. Is that okay, Sue?
Yeah.
Anybody, any other comments?
No. I think those two is right. I mean, that you're not gonna find much difference.
Well, and maybe we don't, but at least it's puts our heart to mind that, you know,
that was just my comment.
Yep. That would definitely give us an idea then of where everybody else lands, and so we know who we're competing with, and it's a kind of a good refresher, I think, for everybody.
Okay, sounds good. At this time, that's just about it. Until next work session, then we'll put it.
Correct.
Yep.
Perfect. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Rich.
Thank you.
Okay, I think this is going to be you, Corey, isn't it? Update on downtown outreach grant, the CYC OKT.
Yeah, this is the grant that we've been working for at least 9 months, if not a year. And it's the grant that funded the community survey that went out over the winter. We got the 700 plus responses on asking about the city center property, but also just downtown in general. Mm-hmm. And I think we shared those responses, I want to say back in the spring, maybe March or April. So it's been a couple months. And we got together with the steering committee about a week and a half ago. A couple council members were there. Connie and Craig were in attendance. And then some community members as well, Kathy DeBone, Ann Gaywith, Roxanne from the library, and then some staff from CYC. And ultimately we were talking about, well, how do we kind of wrap up that grant? Because most of the money has been spent already. But we also want to use the people that filled out the survey and see how we can re-engage them. So the next step is I need to work on drafting an email, hopefully by the end of the week, that is going to be sent out to everybody that filled out the survey that we had email information from. Yeah, just letting them know that, hey, thank you for doing this. We haven't gone dark. We've been working behind the scenes, working with U of O on the conceptual design and the streetscape project's underway, and as we head into probably early September, that we want to have, and this was at the recommendation of the steering committee, an on-site, on the city center site, an open house type meeting to then re-engage the community, people who filled out the survey or anyone else that wants to come, so that council and the city can get more direction and the urban renewal district can get more direction on what to actually make that final site plan look like. You know, do we need to put a splash pad on there? Do we need to have X amount of parking spots? Should we have this? Should we have that? And they were all suggesting some really cool ideas in terms of some interactive features and ways to really engage and stand on the property and imagine what it would be like. So really just an update on that. Stay tuned. I'll make sure all of you are included in that email. I think we said the steering committee was going to get together one more time in August, I think, to talk about the details of the open house. But that'll be an exciting way, helpful way, I think, for us to close out that grant and keep the momentum moving on the city center.
And sustainable cities information will be included and all that?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is, so we had talked about having the end of year celebration in Lapine for Sustainable City Year, right? And so that will probably occur, could occur, you know, within a few weeks of that on-site open house. But the open house is really gonna focus on the concept that the Sustainable City your students put together.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and then the community engagement and feedback perspective, yeah.
Sounds great. Any comments, council? Nothing?
You're sitting down there quiet today, I haven't called on you.
No comments on that? Okay, that sounds great, Corey.
Okay.
Okay, let's move on to the next one, and that's the potential land for north-south multi-use path.
So, put together a brief staff report to try to articulate and walk all of you through what this really is all about, and a smidge bit of history, you know, we've got the kind of the northern end of the city and the southern end of the city with commercial and residential at both ends. And it's been, I know it's been a long priority of council to find a way to improve the pedestrian bikeability connectivity between both ends. So how do we do that? One way could be to work with ODOT, and we've had limited progress there. During conversations with the Deschutes County property manager, who the county happens to own a lot of land adjacent to the highway in between the middle section of the city. And if you look at our comprehensive plan map over on the wall there, I know it might be tough to see, but there's these green lines that, you know, they kind of, you know, they go up and down and over and across. Those are designated greenways in our comprehensive plan that were really set aside with the thought of facilitating a path project. And so for whatever reason, it hasn't occurred yet, but one of the ideas would be to engage the county to grant the city an easement, possibly, you know, say 20 feet wide, that would allow the city to then go in and install multi-use paths in the future. So, and the county owns all the land to almost be able to go around the entire inner section of the city, so it facilitate a lot of multi-use path building. So in terms of kind of next steps, it's not taking on the project of actually constructing it, but trying to keep some momentum moving forward so that if there was a grant opportunity, we could say, hey, we have the land, we have the authority to be able to go in and do this, and oh, by the way, here's some city dollars we budgeted to match or whatever. So I think it helps unlock the potential of this becoming a reality if we do the easement approach.
Okay, I think that's great, and I know talking to the commissioners, every single one of them is behind us, so, you know, it looks like, you know, as much as we were saying before, if we push it ahead, we'll get it, and we'll find the grants and stuff, because this is something that I've been passionate about, and I think a lot of the people have been passionate about, is connecting the two ends of the city. So I think this is great progress for us, I think. Any other comments, Thompson?
Just curious, the green, if that was technically green spaces, like designated park areas, or I guess I'm, because, and I'm, my thought automatically went to meeting with the Parks Department and their...
The main reason that area is designated green is really for future development, so that if someone came in and wanted to do a master plan in that area, they would be obligated to include, not necessarily in that exact location, but to a similar size in an area, the green space amenities. And so it could be the in the middle, those kind of green area circles are I think more park-like. I think the other areas are more green space buffer from the highway or Huntington or Burgess, and then ultimately it is that connectivity component of the multi-use path piece. We could engage the park district. I think that would be an opportunity down the road in terms of actual construction and or maintenance, maybe.
Well, that's what my other thought was, maintenance.
Yeah, and my quick thought is that, you know, if the county is granting the city the easement, and if we want to see this happen, I think we should be the movers and the shakers to actually do it and to own it. as we work through some of the details, I think there's some cool opportunities to where we could build it and to then potentially we could put in what's called like a reimbursement district so that as that land in the future, it might be 10 or 20 or 30 years, but as that land in the future gets developed, the developers would then pay back a small portion of the construction of that path. Right now, if we don't do anything, the path will only get built once the development occurs, which again could be 10, 20, 30 years. So there's a lot more questions to explore. I don't see any negative at this point to at least ask the county and hopefully receive the easement. And then we can all of you can then have a conversation and say, yes, we want to really move something forward and try to get X percentage done in 2019, or you know, let's wait, we're busy with other stuff, that kind of thing.
And according to Judge Lewis and Tom Anderson, this has been a long-range plan for the county, even for years.
Well, 15 years ago, and I'll give you the history. The intent was exactly what Corey said, that the outer sides were intended for paths. Part of it is completed over on Huntington. See that running in front of the senior center. Mm-hmm. And the part that really is not completed that I believe the mayor has been lobbying for is that along 97. The green spots in the middle are the parks that were intended to be developed by the developer of the property.
Like they did in the first site.
Yes, Crescent Creek. Yes. So that was the intent. And I would like to, you know, jump on the mayor's bandwagon and get that along 97 done by the city. And then let the developers worry about the inner development.
And once we get that, there, like Corey says, there'll be all kinds of opportunities to get grants or even county money.
Well,
I mean, the county's not just gonna like to build it and not contribute anything, because they will.
As you were mentioning, the county is behind it. They just, you know, they're just waiting for the city to say, let's do it.
The last piece I'd add on that real quick is that I have had a recent conversation with the county, and all of you will be brought up to speed on this probably in the coming months. This was just a preliminary conversation about how the county owns that 350 acres. How can we free up that land for prospective developers? And if say it is only a few years go by and no developments occurred, but maybe the city has made some investment in some of the path amenities, that might even help attract developers to say, hey, the community and the city is being proactive about this, and you know, we know that people who want to live in neighborhoods like this want those features, and they're already doing some of it. So there's a lot of things that could be of value in that.
Okay, well, we're on the county land, give us a quick update on the Wickeo Park. Do you have any updates on that? Park and Ride.
For the record, I emailed James Lewis yesterday and I did not get a response back.
Okay.
No, that was this morning.
After I talked to you.
Yeah, that was this morning. So, not sure. The update, I'm sorry. The update is that they are working on an IGA,
right,
between the city and the county. And what that essentially will do is provide the city the ability, the authority to maintain, or the obligation to maintain, the Wickeo Park and Ride. One of the weird things about the Wickeo Park and Ride is it's actually connected to the property to the south. So if we wanted to own it, we would have to go through a partition process, which is not hard to do, but what the IGA, the way James was saying to set it up, is basically you say, you know, here's a 20-year IGA. Whenever the city wants to go through the process, they can do it. So it provides that ability.
But at the same time, we don't all have any idea what ODOT might come up with. So it's better that we don't change lands. We'll just, you know, upgrade and maintain the partnering.
Yeah, one of the things I'm curious about in the IGA is there going to be any financial contribution from the county? So we'll stay tuned to see what that includes. And then to your point, Mr. Mayor, the refinement plan, looking at the whole Wickeo Junction area that's gonna be kicking off in about 6 months, yeah, that piece of land could play an integral part in one thing or another.
And I know all the commissioners behind that one too, so at least we're getting two out of three. We won't talk about the third one yet.
I know which one you're talking about.
Okay, next is other matters. I'm going to let you, just wanted to talk about the fireworks since it's so new to us, you know, the last couple of weeks. We are in other matters, yep, okay. Stu, you want to lead off with this? You know, you have the pictures and the concerns and...
Well, I don't know. I guess my biggest concern is illegal fireworks within the city limits has become a problem. And it has actually gotten out of hand. It used to be that local businesses would get upset because of the mess that was left. Well, I think that is a big concern, but the bigger concern now is the hazard that it proposed, it is out there for damage that could be done within the city limits. Living right on ground zero for the last several years, 14 years, it has gotten progressively worse. And this year was not as bad as last year. I can say that because I think it was because it was on a Wednesday instead of 2 years ago on a weekend. But when you have projectiles landing on your roof, landing on your neighbor's roof, and your lawn covered with debris the next day, with a 100-acre meadow and rangeland out here, a retirement facility right down the street, the possibility of something catastrophic happening is a reality, and it's happening right now in Klamath Falls. It's happening to the north. You know, I, for one, when I was younger, enjoyed my share of lighting off illegal fireworks, I admit it. You know, but I never, well, I shouldn't say that. I guess I did put, you know, other people's property at risk by doing what I did. And we need to probably help prevent that from happening. So I just want to put the feelers out there to the fellow councilors about illegal fireworks within the city. Not legal fireworks, but illegal. When you have a show going off on one of your main streets that is better than the show, that is put on by another organization, it's incredible. I mean, it blows you away that you can't even walk outside without getting hit by something. So, again, just consider it. You know, I do have, I could give you a 4th of July show on my phone to view if you missed it. It's incredible. So that's my five minutes.
So this year, in the future, we had some work session. We ought to everybody think about it, maybe come up with some options, whether to ban them or start off with some other regulation or something, just to get it on the radar. You know, because I know other cities are following this whole lead because it's getting ridiculous everywhere. So we'll just have to, so just think about it, council and staff too, and see what we can come up with. I guess that's all we're asking.
Yeah, my quick recommendation would be, you know, it's easy for us to reach out to other cities and say, hey, how have you addressed this?
Right.
You know, what have you done in terms of policy? But more importantly, what have you done in terms of practice to actually enforce that policy? So we could easily put out some feelers and you know, send an email to the listserv, see what comes back, and then the only way in my mind really that if we even do put in a policy would be we got to reach out to the fire district and the sheriff's department. You know, I don't they would have to be integral pieces to getting the message out, to enforcing, to you know, all of that kind of stuff. So I think actually, I know Councilmember Martinez had mentioned that to me, and I think I mentioned for Jake, Jake's going to be the liaison to the fire district, we've been going to some of the board meetings, to maybe just that during comments at the end, just ask and say, hey, you know, what do you think? What's your thoughts on this? And just, you know, start the conversation high level. We've got 11 months and, you know, however many days, but we know how fast that goes.
So now's the time was to start thinking about it at least. So we'll do that, and great ideas. You can reach out. Jake can talk to the fire department or everybody. Okay, that sounds great. Any comments on that? You guys, any?
Well, I'll tell you right now that Steve's right, because not only just the debris in his yard, but, you know, there's a lot of timber in our area. And I know that in our neighborhood, last year we had a neighbor that set off a bunch of stuff, and there were some people that said something to him, and it didn't happen this year. So I know that a little bit of community push can probably do a lot to help some of that too. However, we do need regulation.
Craig, anything? Any idea from your other side?
Ditto.
Nothing? Okay. Donnie, nothing? Okay, let's move on to public comments. Anybody got anything? Colleen?
Hi, my name is Colleen.
Got to say your name.
Yes, my name is Colleen Scott, and I just wanted on Trenton Tennant's behalf to congratulate him for being elected to the position that he was seeking for FBLA. I know he'll tell you something about it, but we're just very proud of you, and I wanted to say that.
Well, you might as well tell us right now.
All right. Yeah, so for the past year, I've kind of been planning this campaign, and it's progressively stemmed up until I missed the, you know, the last council meeting because I was there. But in Baltimore, Maryland, I went to the National Leadership Conference and ran my campaign to be the Western Region Vice President of FBLA. And I ran unopposed, but I still had to meet quorum. So I had to get 2/3 of the voters in the room. And the Western region has a really bad habit of just not showing up, especially if the person's unopposed, because it's like, well, it's going to win anyways, why? So they just don't show up. And so previous years consecutively, they've waited hours and hours for people to show up. They've gone 3 hours, and then they just called in people they can get elected. When I ran, people showed up without having to extend the time at all. Only about 20 members didn't actually show up. So that means they were probably busy doing something, but that's the first time that's happened in a good amount of years. So the campaign was very successful, and I am the new Western Region Vice President of FBLA. Oh. So if you look up, yeah, if you search on Google just FBLA National Officers, my picture will come up. So yeah, next week I go to National Officer Training and start off a year-long program to read a lot of things and make a lot of things happen. So I'm very excited, and you guys have supported me a lot. The whole community has always just backed me in this, and it's remarkable how amazing things can turn out when you have that support and the motivation to just, like, they're behind me, I know I can do it. So it was really fun. It was the best trip of my life, guaranteed. On Facebook, through my mom, you can actually see that it's like a video of the induction, and they like drop a little medal, and it's on a lanyard, and they put it around your neck. And it was right when the medal hit, there was a big bass drop, and I'm standing in front of 18,000 people in the room, all the members, and there was a big bass drop, and I was like, oh, I did it. It happened, and it all just kind of like sinked in. And it was, yeah, I've been on this just adrenaline rush since to make things happen. So, yeah, it's
and very that's exciting. Where you gave your big speech. That's where you had to give your speech. Right?
Yeah, I gave my speech at the conference, yeah. It was earlier on before that, but yeah. So. Yeah, it was fun. It was cool.
Very good.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, any other public comments? Anybody else have anything to say? Nothing? Okay, we'll move on to staff comments. Are you, Corey?
I've been in and out of City Hall so far this week, and will be for the rest of the week, attending the Oregon City County Management Association Summer Conference. That's in Bend, so it's always nice that it's close, but also challenging because you don't really get to fully unplug and, you know, yeah, So, but it's been good. It's been productive. Had a really good session yesterday on ethics, and that was, as always, a really good reminder, and I actually would make a recommendation to council, whether it's with my agreement or any future city manager, to include that the city manager must be bound by the ICMA code of ethics. And it's just a good rule of thumb to have in there. So I took away that and a handful of other things. So it's been an informative experience as always. We got several projects going full speed. I know Public Works has been going bonkers with monitoring all those. And Jake can say a little bit about that. And then in terms of looking forward, I know Melissa and I are still seeking out some information on some funding opportunities, whether it's the Safe Routes to Schools component. We've been working behind the scenes with Patrick Flanagan, the principal at Lapine Elementary, and also Brian Potwin, who works with Commute Options, trying to get something lined up for this fall. We are so perfectly positioned to take advantage of this money that if we don't, shame on us. I mean, really, it's there for us to get a piece of. So we've been working on that, not too much time and effort, but just slowly but surely. And then some other funds too, there's these stiff funds, and we'll provide more information as we get more information, but we think that might be a good opportunity for some investment on the transit center side moving forward. So some good things in motion and some good things on the horizon, and we'll keep you informed and ask you in particular if you have any questions. So.
Hey, Melissa, you want to come in on anything?
We have the public open house for the new code coming up on the 24th from 6 to 8 at the Senior Center. The advisory committee will meet for a short time before that. Encourage everybody to come out. It's the unveiling of draft number one, which it's pretty nice. It's pretty slick. I read it today. Exciting for a planner, let me tell you. It's got some good stuff in it.
It's a big step in the city.
It is. It cleans up a lot. It makes everything easier for the developer, for the applicant, on my side, on your side. So it'll be really nice. And then we unveil, of course, the downtown overlay. So that'll be fun.
What time was that?
6 to 8, Senior Center, 24th. That's Tuesday, right? Yeah.
What was the date for that?
24th.
This month. We'll send you a reminder.
Yeah, you'll get emails. We'll be mass emailing all the committees and commissions.
If I'm still alive.
I'll stop.
Jeez Louise.
No problem.
Okay. Okay, anything else, Melissa?
I think that's it.
Jake,
I'll elaborate on the bonkers you mentioned. I just thought it was interesting. I was sitting here, I'm like, what am I going to tell them about over the last few weeks? I'm like, why don't you just tell them about what you did today? So today I started off with ODOT, Project Streetscape, looking at their trenches this morning, looking at some utility conflicts. Then it was Housing Works, doing a chlorination on the new water line there. Third Street, stormwater. They're starting the stormwater work, the county is. Dick Russell Construction started that today, so they're opening ditches on 3rd Street, and then they're gonna go over to Huntington and extend that stormwater up to like the post office area. We're working on a lift station today with one of our technicians on the pump. Huntington Meadows, finishing up some chip seal in there, and then I had an interview with the Newberry Eagle at the end of the day.
Cool. Great. Glad Public Works is in the limelight here.
It felt like a ping pong ball.
Ding, 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 ding. Cool, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Lolly, let's hear from you.
Okay. My only thing is the LSD conference. So I need your registration forms. I have a couple of them already. They were unable to secure enough rooms at the Hilton, which is where the conference is being held, because it's in Eugene this year and not Portland. So they sold out on the first day. So their backup is the Valley River Inn, or we can go with another hotel. If you guys have preferences, let me know. But I do want to get your registration forms as soon as possible so I can get that squared away.
Okay. And we encourage all of you to go, please, because it's a really informative experience, as all of you know, sorry.
Ashley.
I don't really have anything. The budgets will be ready at the next meeting for you guys. They're pending review from the staff right now. Super busy first part of the year. Rates are changing. Things are just always busy in July. So that's all I got. But I'll probably have more on this. Including your quarterly financial report.
Okay, thank you. Let's go on to council comments. Let's start with Trent down there. You have anything else to say? Or? No? No?
I think I'm good.
Okay. Greg?
Once again, glad to hear that the multi-use path to connect to south and north end of town is still in the works. I'd like to see that.
Okay. Is it done?
No comment.
Whoa. You're still alive, right? Stu?
Everyone is catching their breath after the holiday festivities. Happy to report my pickup survived.
My husband driving it.
And the rodeo, the grand entry, no one fell out back or anything. But I think it was an opportunity for Central Oregon and the state and visitors to see Lapine at its best. Flags were out all over the place. Unfortunately, there were some that weren't out, but they'll be out. You know, we'll get there. So thank you. That's all I got.
Okay, Connie.
Kind of like Stu, catching the breath after 4th of July festivities. It was fun to serve with the woodcutters breakfast and meet and visit with a bunch of people. And it was fun to ride in the rodeo grand entry and be involved in that. COIC canceled their July meeting, so I don't have an update on that. I was wondering, though, how implementing staff going to some of the committees is going, and if we will be getting some kind of updates from those committees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. Quick response. So Ashley has been going to the chamber meetings, Jake's been going to the fire district meetings, and Melissa's been going to the park district meetings. I think that's all been occurring fairly regularly.
I've missed one or two, I'll be honest with you.
Off and on, but for the most part.
Chamber's canceled for the summer, so I went in May and June, and then I'll return in September.
Why don't we, under staff comments for the following meetings, that'll be one of the staff's comments as what meeting they're on to.
Sure, and if there's any
updates, I won't be canceled in that last month, this month, during the summer, but let's put that as part of staff comments. That'd be great. Anything else, Connie?
No, that's it.
Okay, I'll say it was not a good event. So we had a little plaque here for a sponsor.
Oh, cool.
From the High Lakes Car Show. Mm-hmm. And they had 137 entries, which is the highest they've ever had. It was an amazing show over there. I gave out the mayor's award, a nice, 67 Chevy, Chevelle 396, red, of course. Anyways, that was a great event. It's an example, and then the parade. I think the parade, we had a bigger turnout than the parade than either. It's almost like the city's growing. Every single thing that happens is getting bigger. I mean, even the Rhubarb Festival, even though it changed locations and everything, and it was a sort of a crappy day, it was a major turnout. Mm-hmm. I thought that was great. The parade went well, the rodeo, of course, Larry didn't dump us out of the truck or anything. That was good. I think I'd like to see the representation of council at these events. I think it means a lot to the public to see your city leaders out there. And we did that.
Poor Larry, he's a commercial driver,
Okay.
Poor guy.
Well, we got to bug him a little bit. Wow. Okay, so it was good. I'm not going to go to the LLC conference or the mayor's conferences. I'm going to run for mayor, so I don't think it's appropriate to spend city money putting up in a hotel. But they are a great thing to go to. And that's about it. Thanks for giving me a week off. A lot of phone calls and stuff. It was greatly needed and greatly appreciated. Thanks, staff. Thanks, council.
Mr. Mayor, did this side of the room get to see your flag?
We'll pass it around. Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
First and second, all say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Meeting adjourned.
Nay.
You're dead.
You're always too late.
What were you gonna say about Larry?
Public can look at it.
Oh, I'm.
Get a little plaque.
That is, that's a nice guy.
Oh, yes, welcome to the.
Now we can wear our.